baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. It is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon kind of day. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And buddy, we have all sorts of comments to get to today.
Some real news happening, which is good. We're getting closer to the ball season. So
exactly. Brandon Belt going to the Blue Jays last night. Of course, there's some questions concerning that, so we'll get into that. But yeah, like you said, man, this lineup is starting to come together. And it's relieving, I would say, as a Blue Jays fan, because it's been kind of an anxious offseason. They moved Teoscar and then they didn't do anything for so long. And you're like, what is the vision of this front office? Where are they going? And then they moved Lourdes. They bring in Varshow. And you're like, okay, it's starting to come together. And then bringing in that lefty power bat from the bench and Brandon Belt, definitely paying him a little bit more than we had expected. I know we did a video on him just as the news dropped. So we didn't know the money and the actual term. The rumors were that it was 1 year. So we figured that kind of a rebuild type contract for Belt. However, $9.3 million is definitely a little bit more of a price than I was expecting. Not our money. I really don't give a shit. I love the fit of this piece.
Yeah.
All right. So we have all sorts of stuff to get to, so we won't spend too long on this intro. Of course, you can always get a hold of us through Mailbag on Twitter. We had lots of interaction on there recently. I know our numbers keep going up, so you can feel free to follow us and DM at Walkoff Podcast. You can do the same on Instagram, The Walkoff Podcast. Discord, always a happening place. The link is in the show notes, and that is always free. And of course, you can drop your comments here in the YouTube. I should stop calling it the YouTube because like it does make me sound. Oh, it makes me sound so old. It's like my mom used to get mad at me and be like, "Are you smoking the marijuana cigarettes?" And it's like, "Mom, stop saying the." Yeah. So we do comb through all the interaction. We appreciate all the comments and questions. We are at the point right now where we're getting like hundreds to. Even we might be pushing 1,000 comments at times. So our apologies if we don't get to you. Today's episode brought to you by Patreon. I'll let you take the lead on here, Adam, as I know we've got a few new members this week.
There we go. Yeah. So Patreon, patreon.com/walkoffpodcast. So shout out to Christopher Griswold and Neil Rhodes. Thank you so much for supporting us on the Patreon. So,
welcome, boys. I know they were new members as of this week, as we do have new things to offer on Patreon. Number one, I'm aware that some of you get a little annoyed by the fact the clips are put out before the full episode. That is not something you'd need to worry about if you join Patreon. Obviously, ad-free as well, as you get access to it unedited right out of the gate. We're doing trivia nights as well, something that I'm pretty excited about. I know, Adam, you were talking just before the show. The poll is up right now in Discord. What's that looking like?
Poll is up. Major League leading votes right now. So it looks like Major League is most likely going to be our first trivia night. So if you haven't seen Major League in a while, go find a streaming service, download it, whatever. Watch it, and we'll find a date closer to.
Okay. I know one of our OG members in Patreon and Discord in general, Ian SCTI, some of you might know him as, is super excited for this trivia. He's got his wife and his kid all pumped up, so they're going to kind of be like a team. That's so it's awesome. Kind of cool. I'm really excited about this trivia stuff, so feel free to join Patreon to contribute or participate in that. All right, let's get into it. Let's start her off here.
All right, so first question does come from Patreon. So Wyatt wants to know, hey fellas, question for Monday's mailbag. Did either of you see the Yankees suck chant that broke out at the Bruins Ducks game at the Honda Center last night?
I did.
Days ago. You did?
And it was delicious.
I love it. I didn't catch it. However, I did see that Red Sox owner John Henry was getting booed at the Winter Classic
at Fenway Park there.
At Fenway Park there between Pittsburgh and Boston. So
Red I think Sox that was, fans that, know two things. They know that they really don't like the Yankees, and they're pretty pissed at management.
I think this was right in that window between letting Bogarts go and not having and signed Devers yes, yet. So
yes.
There you go.
Thanks, all Wyatt. Right.
Thanks, Wyatt. Next one here. We've got, does banning the shift put more pressure on the infield or less or no difference at all? And that comes from Retset Vet on YouTube. So good question here.
What a great question.
This is going to be something that is going to be, I don't know how clearly it's going to play out in the stats or mm-hmm. the advanced metrics. There's a lot of, what's the right word I'm looking for here? Factors that will increase one side of a statistic and decrease on the other.
It's going to be so interesting, Adam. Like, because we really don't know how this is going to play out. Like, there's a lot of people who are making predictions on how this plays out.
No idea.
So for those of you who aren't familiar, basically the way this shift ban is going to work is there is a diamond at the back of second base.
So imagine the baseline continues from first to second into the outfield and same from third to second into the outfield. That's the pie piece behind second base, right? They have to be on the proper side of that.
It's going to be similar to hockey with the goaltender and where he can go behind the net, right? So there's going to be an area he can fly in, and then there's a no-fly zone, and that's going to be similar to that. Also, the outfield, you're not going to be allowed to place a fourth outfielder in there. Everyone is going to need to have a foot on the dirt. And when it comes to the outfield, they can still shift substantially, but there are going to be lines where those fielders can't cross. However, this Blue Jays outfield, I mean, they very well may cover more ground than any outfield out there. That will need to be weighed and found out for 2023. But boy, oh boy, the range of Kiermaier, Springer, and Varsho, it is going to be a top outfield defensively. So that's exciting.
Very much is. With a mind on a guy like Bo Bichette, do we see more errors, fewer errors? What do you think comes from Bo Bichette? Does this have a good impact on him? Because for me, it feels like, as far as infielders go, this is going to reward the athletic players more than anything else, right? Because
and that is what this move was about, right, buddy, is that they're trying to create more action in the infield, get those feet moving.
So I mean, does it put more pressure? Here's the question, right? Does it put more pressure on the infield? I would say it's going to ultimately lead to more exciting plays.
I would say so.
I think there might be more infield hits that find eyes through the infield. And I'm fine with that, but I do think.
And I'm I agree. And to go back to your question of how does this affect the Toronto Blue Jays and Bo Bichette at shortstop, and I know we touched on this a little bit over the last couple weeks here, Adam, but I think it's going to be a good thing for him. He tends to be a dude who overthinks. This is typical youthful shortstops, right? They get the ball. The amount of times we've watched Bo get that ball on a routine grounder, double pump the glove, and just those wheels turning, and then him airmail it or bounce it in the dirt to Vladdy when he has all sorts of time. So I think him moving his feet, him needing to make plays on the go, is going to allow him to get out of his head. And I'm hoping, and I know Blue Jays fans are there with me, that this translates into fewer errors and a little bit better defensive play out of Bo Bichette. But who knows? Time will tell.
I think it's gonna be good stuff. All right, let's move on from there then. This one,
great question, kinda, by the way. Yeah.
This next one comes from Discord. There was some discussion back and forth about who is our starting catcher this year. Who's our main guy, Scott? And you and I had a little bit of a text chain going back and forth, and I was kind of surprised by your answer because I've always, I think of our three catchers, this is a past, this is a dated outlook, right? Because I know Gabriel Moreno's not with us anymore. But of those three guys, Kirk was the one I was the lowest on. I still am the lowest on him. I was kind of surprised that you also think he's a little bit lower down in terms of his ability to play every day. Like, I don't know.
So this is what happened. Adam texted me and he was like, how many games a week do you think Kirk is going to catch? And we'd love to hear from you too. Feel free to drop your comments in the comment section here. How many times will we see Kirk behind the plate in a week? So I said probably two. That was my answer. I said, you're going to see Danny four times. You're probably going to see Kirk two.
Now,
however,
sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just, this is the, all the speculation we're about to do is based on Danny Jansen being healthy, right?
Yes. Yes, obviously.
Okay. So Danny Jansen has missed a bunch of time. So that is definitely something to consider. I know we were texting with Joel this morning and he was going on again about Danny Jansen's ability to stay on the field and whether or not he should get a Sean Murphy comparable contract. I love Danny Jansen, friend of the show. We've had him on. We're going to have him on again, but the injury history is a little bit concerning. Is it not?
Yes. It is concerning, and I would like to see him play a full season in 2023 before they go ahead and make a extension offer. However, I'm super high on Danny Jansen. I think anyone who watches the program knows we both love Jano. Mm-hmm. Kirk, I am huge on his bat. I love Kirk as a hitter, and so I kind of had envisioned him four times in the DH role, maybe a day off, and then two times behind the plate, catching for Manoa, and then one of the other five starters. However, as we were texting back and forth, I said to you, hey, can you look up what his offensive production is like, Alejandro Kirk, behind the plate in comparison to designated hitter? And right away, I was like, watch him be a way better hitter when he's catching, and then I'm going to need to change my position on this. Well, why don't you give us the numbers here, Adam?
All right, so yeah, like you said, we kind of anticipated that his numbers would be higher as a DH because he doesn't have the exhaustion level of also squatting behind the plate. But these numbers are a little counterintuitive here. So career numbers as a catcher and as a DH, better as a catcher. So he hits .288 career as a catcher, only .260. As a DH.
Slugging 30 points is substantial on your batting average too.
Yes.
So he is more dialed in when he's behind the plate for sure. Go ahead. Sorry.
Slugging percentage also substantially better, about 25 points better. So .441 as a catcher, .416 as a hit as a DH, which leads to an OPS of 60 points better as a catcher, .813 as a catcher, .757 as a DH.
Which is really interesting, and it's funny because there are lots of dudes out there like that. They are just more dialed in when they're also playing defensively. There's just no downtime, right? No time to let your brain wander. No time to lose that intensity. So, especially as a young player, I guess this isn't surprising, although it did take me aback when I heard these stats because I had envisioned Kirk taking the majority of his at-bats at DH. But I think that what we're going to see is probably a pretty even split. We're probably going to see Jano three times a week and then Kirk three times a week. And then, you know, maybe Varshow gets one every couple weeks in there, you know, just keep him. I don't think Varshow is going to get a lot of time behind the plate, but you wish him to get a little bit. You wish him to be a little familiar with Blue Jays pitching just so that if there is an injury, you have a guy who can step in and take the reins. So I think we are going to see Varsho a little bit there. So I'm curious what all of you think. Like, where is this time going to be split up? How are they going to divvy up the behind the plate work? And how much time do you see Varsho getting? So again, we're kind of, where are you, Adam? Are you kind of on that 50-50 fence now too after seeing those splits?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still leaning, I think, Danny Jansen more than Kirk. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess, I mean, we're going to roughly say 6 games a week, right? I'm thinking yes. Probably 3 or 4 as Danny Jansen and 2 or 3 as
Alondra. I do wish to really quickly bring up here that Danny Jansen, yes, he probably calls a better game. Kirk, defensively, his numbers last year were better than Jansen. And sometimes people are down on Kirk's defense, but he's a pretty darn good defensive catcher. My concern with Kirk behind the plate for, let's say, 4 or 5 games a week, there's been nothing in the past to show he can do that, that he can sustain that sort of workload. It's a pretty big year for this Blue Jays team. I think 2023, they need to go deep into the playoffs, or there's going to be some big time questions to answer, especially for this front office. So I think they're going to roll more with a 50-50 idea. So we'll see what happens. Brandon Belt's interesting, though. It is going to allow Kirk to take a few more days off. And maybe this is why his DH numbers are a little lower, is that he wasn't getting any time off last year by the end, especially, right? They needed his bat in the lineup every single game. There weren't options. So having Brandon Belt to be able to put in there and give Kirk a day off a week, I think is
a proper
huge.
Day off.
A proper day off is huge.
Great point. Okay, good question there. Let's move on. Brandon Belt, you mentioned him yourself just now. Obviously, Blue Jays signed Brandon Belt last night. Lots of questions flowing in on this. Was it a good move for this team? Is basically the question we're getting to today. So Dennis DM'd us on Twitter, said, "Hey, Scott and Adam, woke up this morning, saw Brandon Belt as a Blue Jay." So for mailbag, my question for you is this a good move for the team?
Okay, so we did a video yesterday right after this news dropped, but let's deep dive this a little bit further, especially now that we've had a night to kind of let it ruminate, to let it percolate in our brains here. Sure. and see what we like about this. Is it good? I think the easy answer to this is low risk, high reward, 1 year, $9.3 million, maybe a little pricey, maybe a little bit of an overpay, but it's 1 year. It's not our money. Great bench piece. And how many times did this Blue Jays lineup get dominated by relatively subpar right-handed starting pitching last year? Let's face it, too many times. It got frustrating many times last year. This year, they're going to have the ability to literally roll out 4 left-handed hitters into the lineup on any given night. This is not an option they had in 2022. And I think that's going to make a major, major difference. Like the lineup against right-handed pitching, we're probably looking Springer, Vlad, Bo, Belt, Kirk or Jano, and then Chapman, Varshow, Witt, and Kiermaier. Like, that is substantial. I also love this move for how deep it makes the lineup. Chapman, Varshow, Merrifield, and Kiermaier. They all are very good at picking their pitches when they're in the batter's box. Okay? Discipline. Mm-hmm. Plate discipline has increased substantially on this team with this Brandon Belt move. Just the moves that they've made in general. Okay. This move also takes, like I said, the pressure off of Kirk to play every day. He's going to be able to get a day off a week, which is going to be super important. And not just the day off. The fact that Kirk isn't sitting there feeling guilty that he's taking a day off, so he's allowed a mental reprieve as well. Because Brandon Belt is going to definitely uphold his end of the offensive bargain here, right? Like, Kirk's not going to need to worry about, oh, Biggio's taking it at bat for me. So this is huge. Injuries are, of course, part of the problem. I'm going to get into the negatives after we go through all the positives here. Sure. So we'll leave that till the end. Okay. But in the last three seasons, and this is a really interesting stat, in the last three seasons, Brandon Belt only had 10 plate appearances where he wasn't shifted on.
Wow. That won't happen this year.
That won't happen this year. I think that's going to add to his production. And when you look at the lowest chase rates from 2020 to 2021, a substantial sample size, his chase rate, 12th best in the entire league. The guy is patient at the plate. He's going to make the opposing pitchers work. On top of that, guys, ladies, gang, if you will, when was the last time this team had an efficient pinch hitter? Think about that. Who can you think of? Well, we got to almost go back to Matt Stairs' days. I mean, I know I'm forgetting. I know Kendrys Morales. I know there were guys out there who could do it. But honestly, Belt since 2019 has been an incredible pinch hitter. 391 for on-base percentage. Almost 1,200 OPS. And an MLB high 6 home runs off the bench in pinch hitting situations.
Wow.
So this is going to give the Blue Jays brass. This is going to give Schneider, Mattingly, and the whole coaching staff more options when it comes to the opposing team bringing in a right-handed pitcher out of the bullpen, right? Or whatever it may be. This allows them to go to somebody who can produce off the bench, and that's awesome. On top of that, he's a leader. Big clubhouse guy in San Francisco. Go through the comments of our last video. There are San Francisco Giants fans coming in being like, this is such a huge signing for you guys. The guy is a leader through and through. Big clubhouse guy. And on top of that, playoff experience. More playoff experience than anyone on this team that isn't named George Springer. And I think that's massive. He has 2 World Series rings. Anyone with that kind of playoff experience is going to be a huge boon for this team. Plus, this is about insurance. It's about insurance for Vlad at first base. It's about professionalism. He's a veteran hitter and gives this team so much more lineup versatility than they had to work with last year. So to answer the short answer to your question, is this good? Yes, it is. Here are the negatives, though. Okay. Injuries, he has not played a full season since 2019. I mean, he played 50 games in the shortened 60-game season. But other than the asterisk season, it has been a while since he put in a full season. Adam, I know I'll turn the reins over to you here because you read the article about his chronic injury, but we can just touch on that.
Well, the difference being chronic injuries come from what's the word I'm looking here for? Wear and tear.
Yes.
Getting older. I can relate. Sleep on my shoulder wrong. This is not exactly the same thing, but we get where I'm coming from here. This is not a... I don't think he's going to be an everyday anything, is I guess what I want to get at here. We did have a couple comments here on last night's video from Shane, who said if he can play left field and move Varsho to center field in platoon situations, I understand it. If it's just to back up first base and be a part-time DH, which is already split with 3 other guys, Kirk, Springer, and Vlad, then it's an overpay. I don't think it's an overpay. Like, in terms of money, money is just money.
It's only a 1-year deal. We didn't have to give up
any assets to get him. And then follow-up comment there also from Shane said, where is it here? I understand the thinking of 1-year deals aren't overpays, but I don't agree. It's a nothing burger. I'm not unhappy about it. I just don't understand why you'd give him nearly $10 million, but not 7 to Pollock, who fits the roster so much better. Pollock just signed with the Mariners. I just want to jump in here and go, we don't know that we didn't.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it could just be the simple fact that there's the whole Canada issue.
Also, do you know how hard it is to convince those freaking guys that are like, I'm a West Coast guy. I got to be on the West Coast. I love the West Coast. I live for the West Coast. If the time zone isn't as early in North America as it possibly can be, I don't even want to be anywhere else. Sorry. So it is very likely that the Blue Jays did talk to AJ Pollock, kick the tires on it, and realize that they probably need to pivot to somebody else because there's going to be a West Coast team. Of course, there was the Mariners. Great fit for them. Who's going to swoop in and offer similar money, and it's where they want to go. There's nothing you can do with that sort of thing, right? Like,
it's out of your hands.
It's two sides to every coin, right?
I just want to give you career numbers at the Rogers Center for Brandon Belt before we move on from this. So he's only played in the Rogers Center four times. Batting average, .417. OPS.
Not too shabby.
1.617. I'll take that.
The last thing to keep in mind with Brandon Belt for negatives is that his contact rate was way down in 2022 and his chase rate was up. A variety of other numbers kind of suggest his bat speed has dropped. Now, does that come back at age 34? Maybe. He was on a bum knee, right? Like, there is something to be said with playing on one leg. So we will need to wait and see. Does he have the hitting acumen to still produce even with a slower bat speed? Yes, he does. And I do think that this is a really good signing. Thank you very much for the question. Drop your comments below. If you do feel this is a good move, let's hear from you. If you don't, well, we're probably going to hear from you anyways.
Okay. Follow up to that before we move on. Mr. Krister in Discord, just talking about positional situations here. The only way Barger plays this season in the majors is if there are injuries. So you're looking at 2024 MLB debut, more or less. What are your thoughts on, because how this ties into to Belt? Man, I don't know what we're doing for an everyday second baseman, Scott.
I mean, I don't think there's going to be one.
It's a long list of names, and everyone's very capable. Whit Merrifield, Kevin Biggio, Espinal, not to mention a guy like Addison Barger. Who...
And Otto Lopez, all five on the 40-man.
We talk... this is... We talk Alejandro Kirk. We talk Danny Jansen. Who gets more games at catcher? Who do you see? Let's get your crystal ball out. Who do you foresee getting the most starts at second base this year?
Personally, I think Whit Merrifield is going to be, quote unquote, our everyday second baseman. I say every day, but it's not going to be every day. And I think that they're going to really be able to take the stats, take the analytics, zero in on what these three or four guys do the best, and they're going to be able to massage who they're facing on the mound. So maybe unlike a traditional split where it's righty-lefty, they're going to actually be able to dial in on who hits what pitches best, the shape of the ball, who hits what pitches best, you know? So if they've got a guy who's constantly throwing high fastballs, maybe you're not putting Whit Merrifield in there. He seems to chase those. Is Biggio better? Probably not. Is Espinal better? Yes. Espinal handles the high fastball a little better. So maybe that's an Espinal day. So I think that they're going to take this until someone runs away with it. Because honestly, Adam, I think that that's a possibility too. Like, imagine, look at what Espinal did in the first half of the season. He literally took second. It was going to be a split. Biggio was going to get his at-bats.
True.
And then Espinal would put up all-star numbers.
Literally all-star numbers. Just an article from Sportsnet's Nick Ashburn yesterday morning talking about this very situation. And he's saying Splatoon. He's saying, jeez Louise, oh my God, I didn't get a good night's sleep.
Spit it in the Splatoon.
Oh my God. Holy smokes. Anyways, I apologize to everyone. He's suggesting Kevin Biggio is the full-time second baseman when we are facing right-handed pitchers, substantially better against right-handed pitchers rather than Espinal and Merrifield. So, I'm against all my better judgment. I am still on the Kevin Biggio bandwagon. I would love to see a world in which he can be a contributor to this Blue Jays team. It's put up or shut up time for Kevin Biggio, right? How many seasons can I go into April saying make or break for Kevin Biggio? I mean,
so Kevin turns 28 in April. He's 27 years old right now, and I think this is the last year that we can really say put up or shut up. I think that he's going to be given every opportunity to succeed. He's going to be put into situations where his strengths are being played to. I think he's a bench piece. I don't think I shouldn't say full on bench piece. He's probably going to get 100 games, but that's a bench piece in my opinion, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he just need. I mean, we talked to Alejandro Kirk and how he plays better or hits better as a catcher. I think Biggio needs everyday reps.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens here because there is room on this roster for a true fourth outfielder where they can go out and they can maybe sign and a right-handed fourth outfielder. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can actually go out and get an Andrew McCutchen, which would be a great fit. But they could also roll out Whit Merrifield and Kevin Biggio into left field. I don't think it's going to be that much of a hit defensively whenever you're shifting some of these other guys around. If there's injuries, knock on all the wood. We never want to deal with bad tacos, obviously. However, Biggio and Whit Merrifield do have experience in the outfield and have shown they can do it. Addison Barger has played some left field. Otto Lopez has played some left field. There are guys on this roster who can fill that need. Nathan Lucas is another guy on the 40-man roster who very well may be given a look, left-handed bat. I think they're still going to go out and get somebody, but there are internal options.
There you go. Okay, moving on. Two more to get to here. So from Twitter, Jason Burnett messaged us and said, hey, just started listening to your pod and wanted to say I think it's really awesome. Congrats on being the number 3 baseball podcast in Canada. So there you go. That is according to the iTunes charts.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
Some love for us. Anyways, Darian on Twitter also messaged us and asked about with Cueto being gone now. He says maybe it makes Lopez available on the Marlins. And Espinal could be moved. I know they got Jazz, but Espinal could play third with Brian Anderson, a free agent. What do you think's going on with the Marlins? Because I kind of was surprised that the Marlins went out and got Cueto.
I was very surprised. Now, obviously, there were some rumors out a couple of days ago that Johnny Cueto really wished to go to Miami, and maybe that was part of what this was about. I also think this opens up the possibility for Miami to move on from one of these young controllable arms and fill another need, very much like Darian just said with Espinal and filling that third base hole. There is some needs within the Marlins organization that does match up with the Blue Jays. I don't know if the Blue Jays are going to go in as big as they would need to go to get a Pablo Lopez, but I think Miami's up to something. Like they've got too many starting pitchers. And if I'm the Blue Jays, if you can't get Pablo Lopez, I'm just fine with like an Eduardo Cabrera could be excellent for the Blue Jays. He's got a ton of control as well. Another young controllable arm. He's probably expensive as well. Maybe Trevor Rogers is a fit. He had a pretty ugly season last year, 107 innings pitched. I think it was a 5.5 ERA. However, his FIP was just over four. So it does look like there was a little bad luck to that. And if you do look at Rogers' 2021 season, 133 innings pitched, ERA of 2.64. So maybe that's an option for the fifth spot. Miami's moving a pitcher, I think. But you know what they're going to do? Starting pitching is in high demand. We've already seen some of the free agent deals that have been handed out to the top free agents. There's not a lot left on that free agent market when it comes to pitchers that really move the needle. So Miami's probably throwing out a pretty wide net, I would say, and taking the best offer. Will the Blue Jays be that best offer? We'll see.
Miami is in a tough division there in the NL East. Aren't they? They got the Braves, 101 wins, the Mets, 101 wins, the Phillies, 87, but went to the World Series and added this offseason. Mm-hmm. Miami, 69 wins last year. Nice. But they're a long ways away from contending. They got three big dogs. They got a leapfrog. Atlanta's locked up for a long time with their entire core. The Mets can spend endlessly.
Mm-hmm. And are. It's tough. I don't know what Miami does. In all honesty, you really need to make that Sandy Alcantara contract work for you. You need to push your chips in eventually. You can't just waste Alcantara's years. I mean, I guess you can, but you sure don't want to. So if you're looking at the timeline, where do they need to start pushing their chips in a little bit? I do not envy Kim Ng. That is a tough GM spot to be in, especially with the budget of the Marlins. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out the rest of the offseason for sure.
Yes, Carlos Correa is a Minnesota Twin after all this, Scott.
Pending physical.
Sure.
It's a pretty important caveat at this point, I think.
sure it is. The money is a lot lower than I think he was hoping for. $250 million
less than he originally got with the Giants.
$62 million
less than he got with the Mets. Yeah, it is such a wow. Drop it in the comments. What are you thinking, gang? Carlos Correa, like, is this saga ever going to end? Is this where the Carlos Correa adventure of the offseason ends? Right back where it began with the Minnesota Twins?
How do you feel if you're a Twins fan? Are you ecstatic? What's the right word here?
I mean, I think there's going to be a mix of emotions, but in the end, you got to be happy that one of the top shortstops in all of baseball is back with your organization, right? Even if you were a little choked at him for leaving in the first place. Well, how do you feel?
I don't know. I mean, the Twins only had him on a one-year rental, so I don't think they can be too upset with him for leaving. Right? It's like when we brought in Marcus Semien. If after all that he tested free agency and ended up back with the Jays, I think we would just be thrilled to have him, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same as if he just left the Astros this year and did this whole pony show. I don't know. Minnesota... Mm-hmm. That AL Central is a weird division.
This does make them a better team. This does keep them in contention, especially, and I mean, Liam Hendrick, all the mm-hmm. best to him fighting the big C. Fuck cancer. Mm-hmm. And all the best to Liam Hendrick. But that's a pretty big hit because they were either going to move him for assets to fill some needs on that Chicago White Sox team, or they were going to roll with one of the best closers in all of baseball, and now they can do neither. That AL Central is up for grabs, man.
It's definitely up for grabs. I don't really know what else to say about Carlos Correa to the Twins. I mean, it's hilarious.
All I can say, it is hilarious, and we still need to wait and see. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, and I'm not getting fooled again, or something like that, yes. To quote George Bush.
George Bush Jr. Yeah, George W. Oh, man. Well, where do we go from here, Scott?
We'll see you Friday. Let's wrap it up here. Let's also tease some really cool interviews that we have going on. I know Jeff Blair was supposed to talk with us yesterday. Here's the thing, gang. Yeah, we're the number 3 podcast in Canada, according to the Apple charts. We're still the little dog, though. And when something comes up with these amazing guests that agree to come on our show, we are the first ones to get bumped. But of course, Jeff Blair, good man of his word, is going to make it up to us on Friday. So the new show will feature Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker. Tomorrow, we're going to talk with Sportsnet analyst and friend of the show, Shai Davidi, is coming on the show. So we're going to pick his brain on the Brandon Belt trade and where he thinks this Blue Jays organization is going from here. Thursday, we're talking to friend of the show and now New York Met, Taylor Sesedo. So there you go.
There you go. All right. We'll see you. See you Friday.
Yeah. See you Friday. Yeah. Or
what
tomorrow,
an off
whatever.
Day for me. I got like 2 hours of sleep. I have more cups of coffee than hours of sleep. So I apologize to you, Scott, and to everyone watching. I will be better on Friday.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is the thing, right? Every podcaster is on their game 25% of the time or off 25%. It's that 50% in the middle, buddy, and you're killing it.
Just like pitching. All right, we'll catch you on the next one.
Cheers, gang.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him.
Thanks for listening.